Welcome to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go. Welcome back, my friends, to another episode of Life After Corporate. And I have a very fantastic guest to share with you today on how to become an in-demand speaker to increase your influence and your revenue through speaking on large and small stages. And I'm thrilled to introduce you to Shannon Huffman-Polson, author of The Grit Factor, founder of The Grit Institute, one of the first ever women pilots of the Apache helicopter, and someone who I am pleased to call a dear friend. She is an incredible leader, a mentor, someone who I met in the Elevate Network. And so, Shannon, welcome to Life After Corporate.
It's so good to be with you, Deb.
Well, our listeners are going to be very interested in hearing about your journey. It's a fascinating journey. You're an incredible storyteller. If you haven't already, follow Shannon and download her speaker reel. She's an incredible storyteller. But they'd love to hear, you know, how did you go from the U.S. Army into getting your MBA, going into corporate, and then getting to where you are now?
Yeah, I have a very windy path, and I have liked it that way. But yeah, I did have the opportunity a number of years ago to be one of the first women to fly the Apache, and I served for a decade in uniform. I led three different line units on three different continents. And then at the end of my obligation, I left the military and went back for my MBA at the Tuck School at Dartmouth, which was absolutely the right decision and a challenging transition to move from this really, really incredibly intense insular culture that's so focused in a particular way into an academic environment. But I will say Tuck was an absolute gift in so many ways, but it gave me those 2 years to connect to what the rest of the world was doing and the way that they did things and the way that I could transfer the experience in operations and logistics and personnel and leadership really into the corporate sphere. I worked for then a few years in the medical device industry and then transferred to the technology industry. I worked at Microsoft for a while. And, you know, I left Microsoft. There's a number of reasons. It's sort of a long story, but basically the short story is to write my first book. And my first book is called North of Hope, A Daughter's Arctic Journey. It came as a result of a family tragedy, but it also came because I have always known that I wanted to write since I was a little girl. And so this is nothing new to have embarked upon it in my 30s because I'd been doing it all along. And I left because I knew I needed to really focus and spend time on that work. When North of Hope came out in 2013, and I'm very pleased to say that it is still available to you today, it was clear to me that I both loved that creative space, which I had really missed actually in my corporate and my military careers, but also I really love business. I love leadership. I love operations. And so I wondered how it was that I could blend the two. And I will say, Deb, I mean, it's amazing that you mentioned Elevate, because Elevate, which was then 85 Broads, which I had joined in business school when it was only open to, you know, it sort of started out as Goldman Sachs alum, and then it became like the top 10 business schools. And then it has continued to grow and blow out since then. And I started out with doing a jam session on an 85 Broads, now Elevate, lunchtime platform. And I had no idea who was on that jam session, but I put together a session on how narrative shapes our experience. I was trying to think, how do I take this incredibly creative work and make this apply to the business and leadership and operations world that I have inhabited for the last 15 years? And the narrative piece was a very strong piece, that story piece. And then I had somebody reach out from New York Life and say, hey, would you come present to us in Manhattan? And I thought, oh my gosh. And you know, that was not, it didn't skyrocket from there at all, but it did allow me to start to explore the possibility of then finding ways to take the learning, the messaging, blend the operations and the creativity in a way that was incredibly meaningful for corporate clients. And I'll quit talking there just in case.
That's a great story. Great story. And for those who don't know, a jam session is a webinar. And yes. What I love about this story is just by having the courage of your convictions and the desire to share your experience with other people and doing it well, that opened up the door to a whole nother aspect of this career. And I forgot about your first book and such a poignant story. I remember looking into that and reading pieces of it on Kindle and just the storytelling aspect. But let's reel it back just a little bit. So I know in your military career, the military grows great leaders, right? Yes. So we know that for a fact. What were some of the lessons that you learned there that you later applied in your corporate role? And how are you still applying those lessons of leadership and what you're doing now with the Grit Institute?
Yeah, and I'm going to caveat just to say that the military is a very large organization. And yes, like any large organization, the people that inhabit it inhabit the bell curve. And the bell curve is the bell curve. And so I would say that there are great leaders and there are terrible leaders.
like any organization, right?
Any organization, truly. And yet, I will say that I worked with some of the best people that I've ever worked with in my life. And I had people work for me that were some of the best people I've ever worked with in my life that were young soldiers. And so, yes, there is that incredible element of connection and development for those who choose to accept it. And then there are others that would inhabit the bottom part of the bell curve. So so I like to remind people that there is that bell curve. So the Grit Factor came about, and I'm going to come at your question from a bit of an angle, because the Grit Factor came about when a young leader reached out to me and asked if I would mentor her. And I bring this up because these are the lessons. These are the lessons that came out of the military that were important to be able to push through the filter of life outside the military in a way that anybody could access them. And I immediately said yes, but I'd been out of the military for 10 years at that point. I'd already written the first book. I was starting to do some other work in the creative field. And I realized, gosh, it's been a while since I've been in uniform. So if I provide mentorship to her, I need to really scale the people and the experiences that are available to her beyond my own, because mine was very unique as one of the first women. So this is this integration aspect into this very, very male dominated field. So I started to do interviews of leaders in the vanguards of their fields. They happen to be women. They happen to be military. They include general officers from across the services, aviators from World War II to the present, a Navy submariner, a combat rescue swimmer, one of the first women Army Rangers, and many, many more. And using both my experience, but also trying to find a way to synthesize those incredibly generous stories and lessons learned from that cohort of leaders is really what ended up forming the backbone of the Grit Factor. And I guess what I would say just generally about that is that what became very clear to me, both as I started to process my own experience in light of these other interviews and synthesize the information that I was pulling in and doing the background research, the idea of grit came up again and again, right? Mm-hmm. And grit was something I'd grown up with, but not grit in the just like get through it at all costs sort of a way. Grit in the sense that grit is this element of our character that we have, all of us innately have. We can discover it if we've lost it, and we can build it if we've let it get a little bit soft. And that it really corresponds to what I now call the grit triad, which is past, present, and future. I call this commit. That's the foundation of grit. The present is the learn phase, deep engagement in the present, and then launching towards the future with that groundedness and that engagement. And I'm so grateful for these incredible leaders who shared their stories, for what became the Grit Factor, what has become the learning journeys at the Grit Institute, because they're so informed by these very personal experiences combined with the most current leadership management and psychological research around grit resilience and leadership.
Wow, that's a fantastic story. So taking lessons from all women, correct? All women leaders in the military. Now, are you working with women and men in the corporate
absolutely
world as yeah. well through the grit learnings? Yeah.
Yeah, these are lessons and stories for all of us, women and men. And the reason that I chose to focus on women leaders was not to make this for women, but was because women leaders, especially in these really intense experiences, have faced what Stanford Law Professor Deborah Rhodes called a double crucible, which is both the incredible challenges of the job at hand, as well as working in environments where they were sometimes simply not welcome, but in other times openly opposed. And so they had this double crucible really to face in the midst of already challenging circumstances. And so if any of us can learn from grit and resilience and endurance, it's from people who have faced this double crucible. And the second part of that was this feeling of wanting to support women in leadership. Women don't tell their stories as often, and wanting to help to elevate those to the place where we are talking about those. We are using those leadership lessons. And, you know, if you wrote a leadership book that referenced all men, nobody would even blink. So right. I think that was kind of a little bit of an extra incentive for me is And it continues to be part of my mission, which is to say that we need to bring all of us to the table to have these conversations. And women haven't been at that table. So the grit factor is work to do along those lines.
What do you think is one of the most powerful and important stories that came out of that book and became a foundation for the Grit Factor, the Grit Institute, and what you're teaching with women leaders?
Oh, gosh, there are so many of them. And I hesitate to share one right now that is somebody else's story they've told. I share them in the book for sure. So I will
tell your own story.
Yeah, I'll tell my own. Great. One of the stories that I tell actually is I introduce my keynotes, and I have the good fortune now to keynote to companies, organizations, associations, literally around the world. And when I begin that keynote, and when you bring me in to keynote at your company, I will always start with the story of the first time that I walked out on the flight line towards the Apache helicopter. And before I get into this story, I'll say that I tell these stories and I get into the takeaways from story, because our brains process information emotionally and in the form of story. The neuroscience is really clear on that. But also because we don't necessarily learn best from hearing direct stories of our industry as well as when we hear it coming from a slant. And so for most people, the Apache helicopter is not something that they're familiar with. But the idea of walking into something that is unimaginably challenging is something we can all relate to. So winter morning in Alabama, I'm walking out on the tarmac towards the Apache helicopter for the very first time. The sun isn't quite up, so it's that pre-dawn sort of darkness. And I can see that helicopter crouching there on the tarmac. And it's lined up with other Apaches also crouching there. It looks like an enormous praying mantis. The Apache is 58 feet long. It is 12 feet high. It's 18 feet across. It has three different sight systems on its nose that see in day and night and infrared. On its wings hangs any combination of the 2.75-inch folding fin aerial rocket and the anti-tank Hellfire missile. There are only two seats in the Apache helicopter. It's a tandem-seated configuration for two pilots. It's powered by two 1,850-horsepower jet engines. It's the most technologically advanced helicopter in the world. And I walked out on that flight line towards that aircraft, and I had chills going up and down my spine. But it wasn't just excitement. It was a little bit of terror as well. But it was also me asking myself this question of, who am I to fly this machine? I mean, I was an English major in college. And right there on the tarmac in that moment, I had to make a decision. I had to decide to be better than any of the doubts that I was feeling, than any of the doubts that I had heard expressed around me about why women think they need to fly this thing anyway. Right there on the tarmac in that moment, I had to decide to own my own narrative. I had to decide that I was going to be the one in control of my own story. Because who was I not to fly this aircraft? So I walked up to the helicopter. I put one foot up onto the wheel, the other foot up onto the forward avionics bay. I opened that all glass cockpit that opens up and out like a Lamborghini. I always like to caveat, I've never been in a Lamborghini, but who needs to fly the Apache? I reached inside. I grabbed those handles. I lowered myself into that seat and I began the run-up procedure that I would know so well that I would know it by heart. The power levers come to full RPM. You release the brakes. The rotors are at full RPM. And you taxi out on the runway then for takeoff. And in an audience, in a live audience, I would say, which way do you take off in the Apache helicopter? Any guesses?
Go straight up.
Straight up. That is usually the guess. Do you go up? And of course you do ultimately want to go up. But here's the key. In the Apache, like in any other aircraft, you turn that nose to face the wind. And when you use it the right way, that resistance will help you to rise. No,
wow.
Is this a difficult thing that I ever encountered? No. But is this the thing that registers with audiences in meaningful ways? Yes. And I will say that is one of the biggest takeaways, is both entering the learnings through story, absolutely, for those who want to be keynoters or who want to write. But here's the key. It's not about you. And I will say the biggest frustration and pet peeve that I have are people who are trying to get into this space and they think it's all about them, and it's not about them. It's about you relaying a message and providing value to the audience or to the client. And until you understand that, you will never be successful in your business. And so that's what you've got to do, is go back to your experiences, your ideas, and say, which ideas are going to give the most value to the people that I'm serving? And you are serving people. That's your job. It's not about you having the courage of your convictions and standing up and being, watch me roar. It's not about that. It's about, how do you serve the needs of your clients? How do you meet the needs of your customers? And when you can get into that space, it's so exciting. And until then, I feel like it's just selfish.
I mean, it's never about you, right? Yeah. So your marketing, it's never about you. When you're speaking, it's never about you. I even read somewhere that someone won't even read an email if the first word in there is I want to say it's Seth Godin, but I'm not really.
No, so Seth Godin will not blurb a book if the first word is I.
That's right. That is absolutely correct. And so, you know, that's a great illustration of that concept as well. And how powerfully you use the lessons of stepping into that helicopter and the language you used, you know, the environment, the sun breaking, you know, what it felt like, what the helicopters looked like. And first of all, we're all in awe of you anyway, because yes, being able to go through those limiting beliefs that were coming up in your head, making the analogy of your point the nose to the wind and encountering resistance, all of those are just powerful leadership stories. So I think by now everyone's super curious, like, how did you take off after that first MetLife, you know, request to speak? Yeah. How did your speaking career really take off? Because last year, I don't think we ever connected at all. Well, last year we weren't traveling. Yeah. The year before, you were traveling all over the place. And even last year, you were doing a lot of virtual events. How did that all happen? Where did that demand come from?
Well, it came over the last 10 years, first of all. So just like anybody else that says, and you've heard those quotes, like the overnight success has been decades in the making, right?
Yes.
I'm only a decade in, so I'm hoping that it's continuing to move up. But the way that it started, it was really with that New York Life presentation. And then I had actually met a woman. First of all, I love people. I love meeting people and I love talking to people. So that is something that I think has been really helpful, because I want to know about you and I want to know about your story. And I met a woman climbing Mount Rainier, actually. So I was still in the military. I was climbing Mount Rainier. I had a Duke hat on. She had a Duke shirt on. It turns out she went to Duke to Fuqua, and I had gone to Duke as undergrad. And we started talking, and it turned out she had climbed Denali and I had climbed Denali. And so we shared these stories and we stayed in touch. And she actually was an Elevate member just to come back. And I hope I get lots and lots of free years of Elevate fabulous.
Absolutely. We're always plugging this.
This is Allison Levine. And Allison Levine is one of the most in-demand keynote speakers anywhere. She's one of the seven summits, North and South Pole travelers who also worked at Goldman Sachs. She's spectacular. And so I reached out to Allison, and she was just starting her speaking career, actually. When I went to Tuck, I actually organized an event to bring her to Tuck to speak as she was just getting started. And then this is now, you know, what, 13 years later. And I reached out to her and said, hey, Allison, you know, I just did this gig. I had a great time putting it together. I had a super time with the client and they were really thrilled. And I want to do more of this. So how can I do more of this? And she basically gave me homework for a couple of years. And it took me a couple of years to do it. And it was basically getting out there, doing more and more speaking gigs, making sure you got the professional reel. I always say you have to have the speaker reel. I don't say that. Everybody in speaking will say that. So the one sheeter is fine, but people want to see you actually in action. So you've got to get professional footage of that. So I built that up over a couple of years. I refined the message, refined the presentation, you know, scrambled really. And then that was around the time that I was starting to do the blog that I called The Grit Project that became The Grit Factor. Mm-hmm. I was realizing that my narrative, how narrative shapes your experience, while incredibly valuable, that I wanted to change that up a bit. And I actually developed my presentation as it is today. I mean, it's continued to evolve, but the basic structure evolved because I was designing it for a specific keynote. And it used to be called Leading from Any Seat. And that was the title of the conference. So I structured my keynote that way. I was like, hey, this is a great keynote after doing all that work on it. And that became my primary keynote. And then after those couple of years, after I had done work for a couple of agencies as well, I pitched myself to Kepler. I worked exclusive for Kepler for a few years. And that means that that agency is the only agency that can book you. And now I've come back on my own. I'm still booked by Kepler and by other agencies as well as on my own. And I did that after the book came out because it just made more sense from the business perspective at that point. But that was a 10-year journey. And that was, you know, that was creating exceptional content, both in terms of trying to get media coverage as well as writing articles and doing presentations, a lot of which are for free for the first few years, because you're building your skills and you're demonstrating your skills and you're getting evidence of those skills. And then you're putting those together and then you're starting to approach people who might book you. And so, you know, it's a journey.
Yeah, there's no straight line to success, just like the entrepreneurial journey. There's lots of fits and starts and twists and turns. But that one experience with New York Life was the light bulb moment that where you said, wow, this was fun. It was good. I did a good job. I enjoyed it. And now I have something that I can repurpose and put on other stages. And so you spoke for free. Then you got an agent who then started booking your gigs. One thing, I heard a story last week, and I want to ask you about pricing for speaking engagements, because, you know, I have a basic philosophy that women are always undercharging, right? We operate under a set of lowered expectations. And I heard a story that Mel Robbins told. Now, Mel Robbins is also one of the most in-demand speakers in the world and one of the most highly paid at this point. But when she first got started, it wasn't true. Yeah. And she told the story of being on stage, giving a killer presentation. The conference organizer pulls her aside afterwards and said, I have to tell you, you were the top rated presentation of this event.
Right.
And what you charged was half of what we paid the men.
Yeah.
And from that point forward, she just doubled her fees. So anything, what do you have to say to the women out there who are now moving beyond the free speaking engagements and they get a call, would they like to speak? And then they get the question, what do you charge? How do you come up with that number?
I mean, that's a really hard question to answer. You start low, right? You start low when you're starting out, and then you increase your fee as you go along. I think the way that I have come to my fee recently is to look at comparables relative to both content and experience, and I have priced myself accordingly. That what that means also is that you start to realize, especially if you're not working with an agency, is you'll price yourself out of a number of gigs. And what I and you have to decide, do you want to do a ton of speaking, which upfront you should want to do that because you need the experience, you need the film, you need all of those things. Or do you want, what's your goal? And my goal is not to be on the road 300 days a year. In fact, I put very strict boundaries on my travel to twice a month. I'll do more virtuals for sure, but because my goal is to create. And so I want to be writing the next book. And then I want to be writing the next book. I love ideas. I love working with ideas. I love writing. And I want to continue to provide value to clients beyond my standard keynote. And the grit factor is incredible. And I can take that in a million directions, but I want to keep going. So it depends on what your goals are, right? And I think that's the tricky thing. Is to figure that out. Yeah, I would look at comparables. I think that's the best thing to do, is to look at comparables relative to your experience. And just like with, you know, you hear about young people or anybody coming out of the gate thinking like, hey, I should be the CEO when I'm 24. I'm like, well, maybe if you start your own company, but like, otherwise you need to put in your time. And there is some aspect of that that is true. I will warn you that I think there are some agencies that will hold you back because you fit fill a requirement to fit a certain price point for them. They want to have so many at 5,000 or to 10,000. Or they want to have so many at 10 to 15 or whatever. And so you need to really be honest with yourself about what value you're providing, what your experience is, and look at your comparables. And then go to your agency and say, this is my fee.
And it's not all about the money. You know, what you said is, what is the lifestyle that I want to be living? And I know family is important to you. Creation is important to you.
Yes.
And I tell that to my clients as well. You know, what is the vision? Your vision for how you want to live your life is what dictates your business model. So let's talk about your business model and this ecosystem that you're creating with writing the books, having the Grit Institute and doing training. So we know the speaking career came first, the book came second, the second book, The Grit Factor, came second. And now I'm sure they feed on each other as well, I'm sure. Explain to us how your business ecosystem works with speaking, the book, the Grit Institute. How are you pulling it all together into that vision for the perfect business that you want to run?
It's a great question. And part of what you realize at some point, and again, this is 10 years in now, right, is that you can't be everywhere at once. You can't meet the demand at some point, which is a pretty great place to be. And so how do you scale getting your ideas into the world? And how do you scale it in a way that is manageable for how it is that you're living your life? I know that the content and the information and the inspiration and the tactical application of what's in the Grit Factor is incredible. I also, because I've heard it, I've seen it in action. I also know there was a lot I couldn't put in there, and there's a lot to blow out in that. And what I was getting from clients was this request to be able to go deeper. And so that's where the Grit Institute comes in. I call them learning journeys. Therefore, I mean, for anybody, I've run, you know, smaller groups like 50 to 60 through one of these leadership journeys. I've also run groups of 500 to 1,000 through these leadership journeys. I really tailor them to, in terms of the actual delivery of them, to what the client needs, to what the customer really is hoping to get out of it. So what we're doing at the Grit Institute is taking certain elements that are particularly in demand of the Grit Factor and blowing those out into much more thoughtful, integrated journeys that an individual can take, that a team or an organization can take. Right now, Going for Grit is up and available to anybody. Anybody can jump on board that. And that's supported by videos. It's by worksheets, by additional reading, by going deeper, by having the opportunity to reflect. We're about to launch any day now a Paths to Purpose, actually by the end of February, I think is realistic. Paths to Purpose. And this is one that I've already brought a couple of corporate clients through, and they've been thrilled. I'm like, this is amazing. Like, the purpose is a thing that we're all looking for right now. We all need. All of the studies are showing that very, very clearly, that employee engagement goes up, longevity goes up, which is a big deal right now, and performance goes up, right? So Paths to Purpose, I'm incredibly excited about. And then Building the Skills of Grit and Resilience will be the next one, and there will be a couple more to follow. So those are all available purely online. So that's completely asynchronous.
So individuals can also do self-study, as well as organizations can bring it in to license for their people. And are you part of the delivery, or this happens all in self-study?
That's an option. Obviously, it's an additional cost. So the way that I have actually led corporate groups through the Paths to Purpose training over the past year has been to kick it off with a webinar and to conclude it with a webinar. And then they do the work in between on their own, but they have access to a social platform that I will interact with them on as well. And so there's lots of different modalities. I am just getting ready to release the option to license as well. And so that will be licensing both the teaching material as well as the ability to bring that into your company with a per participant fee. So that will be coming out this spring, probably Q2. Mm-hmm. And a couple of folks who are already lined up to wanted to be trainers in that. And then they'll have the ability to take that into their businesses and say, hey, I'm licensed to teach Paths to Purpose. And then they can go out and blow it out on their own. So they'll have their licensing fee, obviously, but then they can make that part of their business ecosystem. And so that's the goal really this year, is to build out that licensing piece, to build out the courses, and to really make the Grit Institute come up to par with or even exceed the keynote revenue from the business model perspective.
So what I love about your story, and I want to pull out the lessons in entrepreneurship for those who are just getting started or just thinking about getting started and making the leap from corporate, is that you focused on building assets.
Yes.
Right? Your keynote talk was an asset for your business that you rinsed, repeated, and returned over and over again. The book is an asset for your business.
Yes.
The learning journeys and the Grit Institute that's what the Grit Institute is, right? The training and the learning journeys. Right.
Yes.
So that is an asset. And now you're certifying other leaders in the delivery of the materials. And that is another asset, a certification program.
Correct.
So, my friend, I mean, you are sitting on a multiple seven-figure business, right?
I bet that's the goal, right? That's the goal.
Right? Well, you have all the assets in place.
Yeah.
And then as you continue to focus on new learnings, right? So what you love, you're passionate about, understanding these factors and influencers in building great leaders or building great organizations. And you're very creative in how you build the story of lessons learned in the outside world and how we apply that to leadership. So there'll be more books, more training programs, and more certified people. It's a beautiful business model.
No, thank you. I'm excited about it. I'm in the early stages, to be clear. I mean, right now I'm still working on the assets that will be necessary for the licensing. So that, again, that hopefully will launch in Q2. I'm building out the other courses and the work that goes with that. So there's a ton of work ahead. And yet it's super exciting because it really is. It's a way to really be able to share what I know is transformational with the widest, again, to scale the content, right? And content delivery. And that is really an amazing opportunity because I believe in it. I mean, I really do believe in it. I've done the work to bring it into the world, and I believe in it. And I'm excited for those stories and those lessons learned to really make differences in the lives of individuals and companies. And so that's what you've got to get excited about, right? At the end of the day, again, it's me shepherding these ideas and these thoughts and these concepts and this way of transforming people. And then And then I would say that the other piece of that is having a continual feedback mechanism and continuing to learn along the process. So I actually reached out and had very, very generous responses from a few people in this space in the last month or so, and realized, hey, this is another aspect of what I need to put into this learning journey that allows people to take it to the next 10% and 20% and 30% of integration into their own work and life. And so I have my learning and development person working on integrating that right now before we release Path to Purpose. And so that's hearing from clients and hearing from other practitioners in the field. So you've got to be constantly learning, be willing to receive that feedback, integrate that feedback, continually iterating, I think is really important. And and I love that process.
Yeah, the continuing iteration, and it's the what I call the problem-solution framework. Once you address a concern that your clients have, you solve that problem, a new challenge emerges to bring them up to the next level, and that's a new opportunity to develop something new, and that's the product development process. It's based on listening. It's yes. not about you. It's all about them listening to the feedback in your marketplace. So exactly. Wonderful story. Shannon, thank you so much for sharing it all with us. It's a fabulous business model. We wish you the best success as you go down this journey. How can our listeners keep in touch with you? Like, what's the best way if someone's interested in taking one of those learning journeys or reading The Grit Factor? How do they get it?
Yeah, you can find The Grit Factor anywhere the books are sold in any format that you might like. If you would like to get that for your team or your organization or your company, even better, you can find that at porchlightbooks.com for discount on bulk orders, or direct through Harvard Business Review Press, where they also can ship that to people in remote locations at individual addresses. It's actually spectacular. So I'm really grateful to be partnered with Harvard Business Review Press for The Grit Factor. And I'm online at shannonpolson.com or at The Grit Institute.com, where you can sign up for my very occasional newsletters. And I'll keep you in the loop right there as well. And then you can follow me on LinkedIn or on Twitter. LinkedIn is probably the best place.
Yeah, we'll put all your links in the show notes. And just to bring it all home, this started with taking your passion and your sense of purpose and presenting that to a group of women who resonated with that message. And that's where demand started. So for any of our listeners or those who are watching this broadcast, you have to be seen, you have to be heard in order to start generating demand. And speaking is a great way to do it. Shannon, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
Deb, wonderful to be with you always.
And that's it for this episode, my friend. Stay tuned for more. Follow us on LinkedIn. We have a Life After Corporate newsletter. There's a Life After Corporate page. And of course, join our Life After Corporate group on Facebook. That's it for now. Till next time. Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love.